Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. This week, I am in Turkey, Istanbul specifically, and joining me is Chef Didem Şenol of Lokanta Maya and Gram. So welcome, Didem. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
So before we get into Turkey and talking about Istanbul, can you just tell me a little bit more about yourself, how you became to be a chef in Istanbul?
Actually, I studied psychology in Istanbul, but I always loved cooking since my childhood. But I never thought it as a profession when I was in high school because it wasn't a popular profession at the time. Then in my second year in the university, when I was thinking about what I would do, I was always picturing myself in the kitchen cooking. Then I went to, after I finished school, I went to New York to study culinary. I went to French Culinary Institute, then worked in 11 Madison Park for a while, then came back. I think it's important that you do what you really like, and I'm so happy that I actually became a chef and have a restaurant, so that was kind of my dream.
And it seems to be going very well for you. Everything, more restaurants and all kind of accolades and press and very self-celebrated, so it worked out. So let's talk a little bit more, let's get into, I should say, the Turkish cuisine. Mm-hmm. What are some of the hallmarks of the cuisine?
Actually, when I first came to Istanbul, it was more like international cuisine. We were, 10, 12 years ago, it was more in all the restaurants. It's big menus and people were cooking more international cuisine. It was just the Turkish cuisine that we have at home, mostly. But now it's been, I opened this restaurant 5 years ago, and I can say that the last 5 to 7 years, we found out that actually we really have very good ingredients. We always knew, but still, I think that was the thing that was popular at the time. When I started working in the south of Turkey, for 5 years I worked there, the only option was actually buying from the marketplaces, because there was, not very big companies that would bring you the produce. So I started going to the markets. I started actually have relations with the villagers, talk more about what they have in their houses, in their gardens and things. And then I started putting more things, local ingredients, into my cooking. So now I think many of the chef owners and many of the chefs, I think, know the value of Turkish local ingredients. So that's why we try to come up with menus. And I try to come up with seasonal menus. Mm-hmm. So we go to the fish market every day, look what we have, and then actually come up with menus accordingly.
Let's drill down on a couple of those things that you mentioned. So local is something that's important right now.
Exactly.
It's like a movement. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of those ingredients?
The first thing comes up is the pomegranate extract. It's from Hatay, so the southeastern part of Turkey. The Turkey is huge, so it has different climates, different terroir, and different culture actually, all around the country. So it's very different cuisine actually when you compare the Aegean coast to the southeastern part or the Black Sea coast from Istanbul, is traditional cooking. So there are some ingredients from some regions, like the pomegranate extract, the filik, which is the smoked bulgur, tahini, and all these more Eastern feeling kind of ingredients. We actually buy them from Hatay and Urfa. Good red pepper flakes, they have very good pepper. So actually those kinds of ingredients we buy from that part. There is a city in named Bolu. It's like 2 hours from Istanbul. There are a couple of farms which we actually work with. They get us eggs. They do very good sourdough bread. So that kind of things we buy from them. From the Aegean coast, depending on the season, I buy all the greens and herbs. My father lives in the south. On the season, he actually sends me bergamot, tangerines, and all those. I mean, you can never find bergamot in Istanbul. People know it, but for sure you can't find it. So you have to know the right people and then have relations with them to have the right ingredients.
And that supply chain, did that exist before you started your operations, or has that been like a work in progress to kind of create that connection?
It's definitely a work in progress. It's because the first year we were maybe working with like three people, and now it's more than 20, because now we have so many friends all over Turkey who actually, they also give us a call and they say, like, last year we didn't have this, but this year we have this, are you interested? That kind of.
So can we talk a little bit more about just like more specific ingredients? You talked about bread, we talked about fruit. I want to talk a little bit about dairy also, because these all seem to be very big themes in Turkish cuisine. The bread, maybe you could elaborate on the importance, because I see a lot of media around bread culture in Turkey, and I'm like, it's just bread. How great can it be? And then you eat it, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is not just bread. This is something I've never had before. I don't even know if I could call this bread. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the tradition and how that's kept alive today.
Actually, I think it's a part of the culture. For breakfast, we definitely eat bread and cheese and olives. That's the tomatoes and things.
That's a normal Turkish breakfast.
It's normal, yes. When you start talking about like fruits, yogurt, we don't understand it. We just go for cheese and bread and olives and some tea. So that's the very original, regular breakfast. We use lots of yogurt, but with the food. So it's like you have those stuffed vegetables, like meat stuffed vegetables, like zucchinis or vine leaves and things like this. And we always consume them with actually yogurt. So thick yogurt is a big part of actually our way of eating. And it's not sweet for sure. It's really,
more sour.
Exactly, more sour and
refreshing, cooling.
True. So, and also we thicken it by taking the excess water out. So we do mezes with it. So I think we can talk about good yogurt, salted yogurt, and all those things. That's a big part of how we eat. I think it's a kind like South America, they have sour cream and we have yogurt. You can think of it that way. Also, we eat bread with, I mean, some of the like older people, not our generation maybe, but they even eat pasta with bread. So yes, bread is
everywhere.
But
it's not like bread. For people who haven't experienced the bread here, maybe you can explain a little bit more how it's made and how that affects the taste and the texture, because the bread isn't like you've lived in New York. You know, it's not like sandwich bread. It's not like a baguette. It's completely different in the density, that the way the air is, the texture, everything.
Actually, personally, I don't find that bread good, for sure. We're so used to it. So when you get it from the oven straight away, when it's still warm and crunchy, then we like it. But actually, when you compare it with all that baguette, French bread, sourdoughs and things, it's done with very little effort. The other breads have so much effort, I think. And I think to make a good bread is a hard thing. And all around Turkey, actually, we're eating a kind of bread that we like, but when you look at how it's been done and everything, I can't say it's the best bread. But yes, it's very light, easy to eat for sure. It's not heavy. White bread, white. We believe, I think it's because of the history of the Ottoman Empire and things. Like, my grandmother believes that white bread, white rice is great ingredients because refined things were good at the time. So now that we're using more bulgur and like whole wheat, we believe that it has a value. But in the past, from the Ottoman Empire, they believed that refined things were much more better. So, so the regular bread that actually everybody eats in Turkey is white bread. But I think nowadays, maybe for the last couple of years, it's changing. People are finding out what is a better bread, what can be a better bread. Keeps more, maybe in longer time in the fridge, and they can actually heat it up and eat it and still become something good.
Well, you mentioned the Ottoman Empire, which we have to talk about because of that's one of my favorite things about Turkish culture and history is that time period. And so how did that influence food, and how does that inform the cuisine of today?
When you look at actually Anatolia, you can't find any relations, because when you say Anatolia, Ottoman cooking, it's a palace cooking, so it's really Istanbul.
It's an aristocratic food.
Exactly, yes. And at the time, there was no tomatoes in the country, so tomatoes came in 1900s. Now we eat so much tomatoes, we think that it's a part of the culture, but it wasn't actually.
Where did the tomatoes come from?
I don't know where they get the seeds from, but it's the first like 20 years of the 1900s. So I think they get it from when they were having the wars and they were going abroad. I think they brought the seeds with them. It's same with the potatoes. So tomatoes actually weren't a part of the cuisine, but they needed the acidity. So they needed acidity to actually cook the meats with and things. So in Ottoman cuisine, they use lots of fruit. They have those heavy lamb dishes that they cooked with quince, they cooked with apricots. They had so much nuts, so pine nuts, especially pine nuts, currants. Since I think Istanbul was heart of this spice road, so the spice were going back and forth. So they use lots of spices, like old spices, cinnamon, black peppers and things in rice. They also stuffed rice in fish. So it's more like, again, rice was important. I think onions were very important. They had so much dishes that they cooked onions for hours, and they used this caramelized flavor for the flavor. When you look at Ottoman and maybe a part of Turkish cuisine, the more you cook, the better they believe it is. But when you cook vegetables for so long, actually, they don't have any kind of their own taste anymore. It becomes something, you know, general. Then you can specifically taste the beans, but you taste something as a whole. I think that's how it becomes. But that was the culture. They did like soups from the meats, mostly lamb. They cooked it for hours, and then they put lots of butter and things. So it's a very, I think, kind of heavy cuisine. But yes, palace was, I think, like this to impress people. That was the idea. We use lots of things. I can't say that we use it as it was, but we get inspired. I mean, in my kitchens also, we get inspired by what they do. We do like a mackerel, stuffed mackerel. At the time, we can find mackerel. We do it with pine nuts, rice, and all those things. It works perfectly, but we don't do it as heavy as they did before, so it gives us inspiration.
And what are some of those kind of topics right now that are hot? We mentioned local earlier. What else is kind of a big, is nutrition, health, organic? What are some of the hottest topics in food in Turkey right now?
I think one thing is food without GMOs, for sure. The other is organic, but I find it as a PR thing, really. So, I mean, in my restaurants, what I believe in definitely fresh ingredients. So, like the even in this new gram that we opened, which is a big place, it's like 100 covers, 100, 150 covers. But still, for lunch we use the fish that arrives in the morning. I think that's very important. So, one thing is because getting organic certificates in Turkey is not a very hard thing. So it's better not to use it as a PR thing, but still go to the markets, talking to the local producers, small producers, and trying to actually promote their ingredients also, because people, also the guests who come to the restaurant, learn from some of the things that we put in the menu as well. Like, we're so aware of not using small fish, baby fish. I think that's very important, because there are a couple of fish that's extinct, almost in danger. Yeah. One is a small bluefish. We are trying not to eat small bluefish, which we had in the past. Mm. When I was a kid, we had it all around. But now we're trying... I mean, we're not serving it in the restaurants for sure. So I think that's another topic. Using definitely fresh and local is another thing.
So fish sustainability, mm-hmm. sustainability in general.
Definitely. Yeah. I try to use lots of offals. That's, again,
yes.
Because of our actually respect for the animal and trying to use every bit of the animal, trying to use the waste, if you call it waste. Like the bread from the day before, we try to come up with salads or breadcrumbs or different things for the next day. I think that's the new... I mean, that's what everybody needs to do in a couple of years' time, because we will really need it, yeah.
Yeah. Another cultural question I wanted to ask you before we take a quick break is about gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been in the country too long, and I'm by no means an expert, but I get the sense that food and operations as a business owner is still more male dominated. Mm-hmm. So what has that experience been like for you as a female chef and owner of a business?
At the very beginning, when I decided to become a cook, actually, when I talked to the guys in the kitchen, they were saying, oh, this is not a girl's thing for sure. But I think everything changed in 12, 15 years. Now there's so many girls working in my kitchen, in any of the kitchens in Istanbul. Yes, it's a male-dominated business, but I think most of the businesses are like this anyways when you look at the Turkish scene. I mean, I don't find it hard, that's what I can say. Because especially when you start in the kitchen, when people respect you about what you do, then they don't look at your gender, they just look at what you do, really, exactly, your work. So I think that was the thing that was important. Now, it says, I think, more pluses than more, you know, negative sides.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but sure. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll be learning more about Turkey with Didem Chanol.
Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio, and today I'm talking to Didem Chanol about Turkish cuisine and culture. So let's talk a little bit more about, we picked up off where we left off. your restaurants. You have La Consamaya and you have Graham, which are more recently opened. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about each restaurant mm-hmm. and your motivations behind what you do.
Sure. La Consamaya I opened like 5 years ago. And when
your first restaurant.
My first restaurant. When I opened it, it's in Karaköy. At the time, it wasn't a popular place at all. It was close to my apartment, so that's how I chose the place. The traffic in Istanbul is terrible, so you try to find a place that's close to where you live. And also, I like the history and I like the I like the area. The idea about what I really wanted to do was, again, actually doing something local, have a very small menu that I try to change daily depending on what we find. Nowadays, we change some things daily, some things weekly, and some things monthly, depending on the ingredients. It's open for lunch and it's open for dinner, so we open at 12 and then we don't serve between 5 and 7. And then we start dinner service at 7 and the kitchen closes at 11. We do it 6 days a week, so we're closed on Sundays. It's more, I can't say it's a fine dining restaurant. It's a very comfortable place, but still the food is done with lots of care, and I think the guests really feel it that way. That I think that's the reason they come over and over again to the restaurant. It's half locals, half actually foreigners, our guests. Then 3 years ago, I opened Graham in Şişhane. It's a very, very small place. It's like for 18 guests. So when you compare it with Maya, which is like 55, 60 guests, it's like one third of it. But at the time, I decided to try to find the reaction of artisan bakery because in Istanbul the bakeries mostly are very industrial and they use lots of additives for their shelf life to be long. So what we did is we used just butter, no margarines, good flour, good sugar. And we tried to find out how people reacted, and they really liked it. So it was actually, we have a small like a pastry bar on the entrance, and then we serve lunch, which is very light. So we do lots of things with legumes and vegetables, and we do cold dishes mostly. And then we have like 4 or 5 different warm dishes that changes daily. And we close the place at 6 o'clock, so it's a day place. And for some guests, because it's a very small place, for some guests who want to actually celebrate their birthdays or have a private party, we open the place up for them, so they can have sit down dinners or parties in that restaurant. And now, like 4 or 6 months ago, we opened the new Graham. It's in a very different district. It's in Maslak, where all the office buildings are, like the AIG, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, all those big companies are in the area. So we believe that actually we can cook for more people this still fresh and nice kind of cooking. It's a big restaurant. It's like 150 covers. It has a terrace. But mostly it's very crowded for lunch and then there's nothing rest of the day. We do caterings, so
stay busy.
Exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about when you're not eating or working in one of your restaurants. What are some of the best markets on Istanbul? Mm-hmm. Some of the best little places you like to go eat or shop?
Sure. For the marketplace, we still, as a restaurant also, we go to Fatih Pazarı, mm-hmm. which is not a popular place, but still I find very good ingredients over there. So it's in Fatih. It's on Wednesdays. That's the marketplace that I go to. I like to go to Spice Market. Not for the Spice Market, but there's a cheese guy just behind the market. The name is Temiz Peynir. It's a very, very small store. He just sells cheese.
Turkish cheese.
Also, there are a couple of places in the Balık Pazarı, which is in Galatasaray. There is a candy guy, which we buy kadayıf and yufka, so like filo dough and shredded filo and all those things. Also, he has great marmalades and candies and some like, you know, that kind of sweets. So I like to visit him. In the same area, I have the offal guy who actually he sells offals. And also in Bebek, there is a very small shop that sells almond and pistachio paste, which is very nice.
So. And you use all of those things and very common ingredients, Turkish ingredients.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, maybe you can explain to me in your own words for people who are unfamiliar what the concept of meze is. Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Meze, in the evenings, I think generally, mostly, we like to share. That's the thing. We like to share the food. So it's the same for breakfast. Like the breakfast, we put everything in the middle and people get from the middle. For lunch, maybe people have their own one plate dish, but so we don't share it that much. But for dinner, most of the time, it's on sharing. And meze is that kind of a culture. So you have everything in the middle in small bits. I think a bit bigger than tapas when you compare it with tapas. We like to have rakı, which is this aniseed drink, which is very strong. And it's very hard to actually have it by itself. You have to have something with it. I mean, eat something with it, because it's something very strong.
Yeah, it's like pastis for anyone who's unfamiliar.
Exactly.
Very similar.
Uzo pastis. Mm-hmm. So, like, my grandfather used to have rakı every evening, and he had a bit of white cheese and some melon, some almonds. So that was his understanding of meze, just having something small. And nowadays, we call everything meze, like we do cold octopus salad, and we call it meze. We do samphires and yes, so everything that you have in the middle and share is meze, mostly.
So I was wondering if there are any examples in history of food where, you know, it's attributed to something, but really it's Turkish, where you say, oh, no, that's Turkish, where someone has kind of co-opted it and claimed it, but really originates here.
Ottoman Empire was a huge empire, so many things that we believe is ours is actually that they believe is theirs.
Yeah, it's hard to differentiate.
Exactly,
yeah.
And I think both sides are right. Like when you look at döner or this kind of what Greek call it. The big meat that turns.
The shawarma? Or the...
Yes, they cut
the shawarma, yeah.
Okay, so yes, we believe that we actually own it and they believe that it's theirs, but I think it's from the cultures. So we lived together for so long that I think it's very normal. It's about this yogurt dishes, aubergine salads. So things that we actually were so used to eating in the West Coast, we share all those food, I think, with the Greek. Some things that we believe that actually Turkish, Lebanese people or Syrian people believe that it's there's like kebab and that kind
kebab,
of thing,
yeah.
Which is true. So I can't say it's just ours.
That's okay. Just a few more questions. One of my always biggest curiosities is what the biggest food holiday is in any country.
Mm-hmm.
So the holiday that you're celebrating something and the one that's most centered around eating.
It's the Bayram, so we have this fasting for a month, which actually starts 17th of June this year, so it changes every year. And after that fasting, we have a Bayram, a holidays for like 4 days. It's where all the family gets together and it's all around eating. And since many people fast and they don't eat for a month, that thing is actually really on eating.
Are there any special dishes that you only eat like once a year that you look forward to?
In Ramadan times, we have güllaç, which is like a rice pastry, very thin, layered, and then you put either pistachios or walnuts in between, and then you put a milky syrup on top. Then you serve it with actually rose extract. Mm. So that's something you really have in Ramadan. And also my favorite is pide. So that's a kind of bread, a flat bread. We don't eat in any other month but just in Ramadan. Yes, like putting good butter and cheese and just having sandwiches from that from that kind of bread.
So kind of looking forward, for people who want to learn more about Turkish cuisine, mm-hmm. or want to try to cook Turkish cuisine, what are some resources available? Books or websites, or what do you think?
I think there are more and more books. Like 10 years ago, it was very hard to find books, but now there are more books. I really don't know about the internet sites, the mm-hmm. websites. But from when you search it from Amazon, I think, and there's an Australian, half Australian, half Turkish chef. He has a very recent book that came out, which is very nice.
And what do you think are some of the easiest things to kind of start cooking? Like if you're just beginning to mm-hmm. get familiar with the cuisine.
I think meze is definitely lamb that's been cooked in the oven for so long. Like in my book, I do it with a bit of molasses and some. We marinate it with molasses, grape molasses, and some garlic and rosemary, and roast it for like 4 hours almost. So it's easy to marinate and easy to, but you have actually a taste of Turkish cooking because of the molasses and because of the lamb. So maybe that kind of things.
And tell me a little bit more about where you think Turkish cuisine is going in the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, you've had, like you said, the neighborhood you were in before wasn't very popular. Mm-hmm. It was close to home, and it kind of looked out because this, I feel like your restaurant, which we're sitting in now, could easily just be in anywhere in Manhattan. And this neighborhood itself feels very familiar. It feels mm-hmm. very modern, very hip. There's a lot of construction going on.
Exactly.
So how is the landscape of Istanbul in certain neighborhoods changing?
Yeah, the curriculum has changed a lot. I mean, people told me if I was crazy to opening a restaurant here, but nowadays it's very popular. I don't know if being that popular is good either, but yes, nowadays it's very popular. And there's Galata Port, like a port they're planning to build in the area in the coming times. I think Istanbul is changing very fast, and there are so many now schools, culinary schools opening in Istanbul. So many cooks who actually I think will be. I think there are so many cooks who will have their own restaurants in like 5 years' time. So more chef-owner restaurants, which I think makes a difference because then you're there all the time.
Well, that's a good place to start, culinary school, because it takes time for it to trickle down to get into mm-hmm. the restaurants, to have the even sous chefs and chefs to open.
Sure.
So the outlook looks good, yes?
Yes, yeah, yes, yes.
All right, well, we're out of time, and I'm hungry. So thank you so much, Didem, for joining me to talk about Istanbul and Turkey today.
Oh, it was a pleasure, really. It was a great, great conversation.
All right, well, that's all for Native Today. Join me every Thursday on Heritage Radio Live at 11 a.m., or you can find our podcast online at iTunes and Stitcher.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.